Okay, today is Wednesday, May 25th, 21st day of the month of Iyar. This is the women's Chumash here with the beginning of Sefer Bereishis, Perek Aleph. Okay, Rabotai. Last week, in beginning Sefer Bereishit, we read segments of the Ramban's introduction to Sefer Bereishis. And today, we'll try to attack the text itself. And there are certain units of narrative where it's important to get a perspective of the unit as a whole before you begin to dissect it a pasuk at a time. And often when we've done sections of narrative, particularly in Sefer Bamidbar and Nidvarim, that's the way we've done it. Try to get an overview of what's happening in the unit, and then issues that might arise in the totality of that unit or various issues that arise in the pasuk itself. At least at the beginning of Sefer Bereishit, this particular pasuk, Bereishit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim et ha-aretz, in effect, there is so much discussion on it, and whether or not it stands out and not necessarily connected to the next pasuk, the Ha'aretz Haita Tohu V'Vohu, that we're going to get bogged down a little on what the very first pasuk is trying to tell us. It's a very difficult pasuk to translate correctly, and Rashi, Ramban, Ibn Ezra will all acknowledge and tell us why it is difficult to translate, and then ultimately how they go about attacking it. But Rashi chooses not to address the primary issue in his opening remark. So we glossed through it 2 weeks ago, but I just want to focus on Rashi's opening remark. It has nothing to do with the text per se, but at least offers some perspective as to where Rashi is coming from with his remark. So the Torah writes, Bereishit bara Elohim. So just to illustrate the difficulty, I ask you to translate. What does that opening phrase mean? Bereishit bara Elohim. What does that mean? It's typically translated, in the beginning, God created Hashemayim v'Haaretz. Okay. So then, when we'll see Rashi and the Ramban's issue why that translation is terribly incorrect. Terribly incorrect. So we'll see why. But first, let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says, it's his famous remark, we made reference to it 2 weeks ago. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Lo hayat sarich lahatchil et ha-Torah, Ela mehachodesh hazeh lachem, Shehi mitzvah rishona shenitztavu ba-Yisrael. The Torah should have begun with Shmot chapter 12, in which the first mitzvah to Am Yisrael is recorded. We explained last week that Rashi does not forget the Yisodot Emunah that are contained in Sefer Bereishit, as the Ramban attacks Rashi right away. What do you mean you should have omitted all of Sefer Bereishit? What do you mean? And begun the Torah with Shmot chapter 12, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. How could you possibly even ask such a question? Asks the Ramban. How can you possibly ask such a question? You mean to tell me the idea of God, creator of this world, is not something which is considered an essential element of our faith? That God created this world? And that we did not necessarily, I'm just using the word loosely, necessarily emerge from monkeys? That God created man? That God created every last detail of this world? Is it not something essential in our faith, in our belief? Is it not important to have Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov mentioned as the paradigms of the Avot of Am Yisrael? Ask the Ramban, well, what's Rashi's question? What do you mean, Lo hayat sarech lahatchil haTorah ela meHaChodesh hazeh lachem? So we explained last week that Rashi's question acknowledges that the first aspect of Torah is Emunah. The first idea that must be communicated is Emunah. In the absence of Emunah, nothing is, don't bother learning anything else. If you don't believe that Torah is divine and divine origin, don't bother wasting your time learning anything else in Torah. But Rashi believed that the episode, the drama surrounding Yitziat Mitzrayim, would be a more effective tool in conveying a sense of emunah rather than creation of the world. That's why Rashi asks the Torah should have begun with HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem. Not because story of creation is not important. Story of creation is important by virtue of the fact that it communicates to us a sense and belief in the supremacy of God. Well, that idea could have been better communicated to us had he mentioned Yitziat Mitzrayim. And the proof positive to that is that in the Aseret HaDibrot, where God establishes belief in God as the first mitzvah, it does not say, Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Barati Shamayim Va'aretz. I am God, your Lord, who created heaven and earth. No. It says, Asher Hotseiticha Mi'aretz Mitzrayim Mi'Beit Avadim. Because speaking to the generation who is accepting the Torah, the events surrounding Yitzias Mitzrayim were a reality. Not believing about something that somebody told you. Because that's how all other religions get started. Somebody claims that God told them about it. Yitziat Mitzrayim was not relayed to Am Yisrael because Moshe told them about an episode that took place at Sinai. They experienced it. They lived through it. And because they lived through it, it can become the basis of belief in God. Without any hearsay, without any relying on anybody else who claims to have heard something from a God that no one else was privileged to hear that. Nobody knew anything about Masa Bereishis except Moshe, who was told this by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pen these words. Bereishit bara Elohim et ha-shamayim et ha-aretz. Now, how does Moshe know that God created heaven and earth? Only because HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him. But ultimately, that which convinces Moshe and everybody else that there is a Ribono Shel Olam, it is Yitziat Mitzrayim. That was Rashi's underlying point in his question. Not to discard, as Ramban accused him of, how could you suggest that we should omit all of Sefer Bereshit, and particularly the story of creation, and begin the Torah with HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem? And because the Ramban in his question appears to say that Rashi believes that the Torah's function is only a book of mitzvot. A book of mitzvot. And some indeed claim that's what Rashi had in mind. Not the way I am reinterpreting it. Correct, but that's correct. That's why you would lead to that.
But think that's
correct. And therefore, how would Rashi then respond to the idea of having story of creation told? Isn't that important for our faith as believers in God? It should be written as a separate book. Separate book. There should be one book of Torah laws and another book where Kadosh Baruch will tell not of stories, but not in his Torah, which is a book of how to live our lives. That should not include the narrative history of the creation of the world or the development of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, for that matter. That's the question which Rashi is asking.
Rabbi?
Yes?
How about the mitzvah of Purim Revuv? I mean, you have to have people in order to...
Good. We mentioned last week that the three mitzvot that are found in Sefer Bereshit are not binding on anybody on this planet. Because they are not mentioned after Sinai. Any mitzvah that we observe is to be observed only because it was forwarded to us at Sinai. The fact that Father Abe engaged in circumcision does not obligate any of us to circumcise our child. None. No obligation whatsoever. The reason why we observe the mitzvah Brit Milah, because in Vayikra, chapter 12, verse 3, it writes, Ubayom Hashmini Yimol Bisar Orlata. That's the only reason. Because it says it in Vayikra, that on the eighth day, you shall circumcise the flesh, or remove the flesh of your son. Yimol et Bisar Orlata. But the mere fact that Avraham engaged in a covenant has no halachic standing for members of Am Yisrael. It's a very famous Rambam, you should never forget it. Nitna Torah v'nitchadsha halacha. The Torah has been given, and it's a new set of laws. Whatever happened up until now, irrelevant for us. So we have to somehow find a verse later on, post Matan Torah, to find where there would be a commandment approval. It's an excellent question. Excellent question. Now for Brit Milah, it's black on white. Puruvu, not as clear. And so too is Din HaMasheh. Not as correct. But I'm telling you that from a legal point of view, it is of no consequence to us.
Doesn't the Rambam count them as being from
Bereshit, though,
when it's in the Sefer?
No.
I know the Sefer
HaChinuch
counts
them. The Sefer HaChinuch just lists. That's correct. It's a mitzvah found here. But no. The Chinuch uses the Rambam as his basis as to what constitutes 613.
So in the Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam doesn't have any mitzvot coming from...
That is correct. He will not quote that pasuk as his origin. He can't. He himself says, prior to Sinai is halachically irrelevant to us. Yes?
Well, is Rashi believe that the world was created in order for Matan Torah to...
Okay, that's going to be one of the answers which will be provided. Not Rashi's answer. Let's see Rashi's answer, and I'll put it into perspective based on when Rashi lives. Answers Rashi. Uma ta'am patach bibereshit. Why is it that he opens up with the story of creation? Answers Rashi. Mishum koach ma'asav higid la'amo. God has decided to tell the power of His creation, Koach Ma'asav, Higid La'amo, Latet Lahem Nachalat Goyim, in order to justify giving them that which apparently was given to Gentiles. In other words, we are going to be given Eretz Yisrael. Not right now. And the nations of the world are going to have an argument. We're thieves. We walked into Canaan after having spent 210 years in Mitzrayim, 40 additional years in the Midbar. Then we walk into Israel and start conquering the seven nations who've been living there for several hundred years. We are nothing but thieves. We hear that argument today. Loudly and robustly, we hear that argument. Says Rashi, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to settle the score right at the beginning. I own everything. And I decided that you, the Canaanite, the Chiti, the Amori, will occupy my land until such time when I decide you're not to occupy my land any longer. And as a result, this now becomes the basis of the conquest of Israel. That's what Rashi will claim. She'im yomru umot ha'olam li'Yisrael listimatem. Should the nations of the world decide to tell you, you are thieves, shekivashtem aratzot shiva goyim, for you have captured, taken over the land of, occupied by seven nations, heim, Am Yisrael, will say, omrim lohem, Kol ha'aretz shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. God owns everything. You the Kanani, you the Chiti don't own anything. Hu bira'a unitana la'asher yashar be'enav. He created it and gave it to someone he desired. Biritzono nitana lahem. U biritzono natla mehem unitana lahem. With his will, he gave it to them. Then he decided, I don't want you to have it any longer. I'm taking it away and I'm giving it to somebody else. So says Rashi. So says Rashi. So just to give a little more sophistication to Rashi's words, the Ramban, who disagreed with Rashi in this regard about this pasuk and why Sefer Bereshit begins with the narrative of creation, at least decides, I'm going to give him some support. I want you to look at the following psukim in Sefer Bereshit, and you are to look for the parallel, the common denominator in each one of those episodes. Each one of those episodes. I want you to look at Bereshit chapter 3, Pasuk Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet. Chav Gimel and Chav Dalet. Put one finger over there. Then you are to take a second finger and put it in Bereshit Vav, Pasuk Yud Aleph and Yud Bet. Yud Aleph and Yud Bet. Then you take a third finger and you put it in Perek Yud Aleph. Perek Yud Aleph. It's the beginning of the Perek, and then it concludes with verse 9. Pasuk Tet. Three things to look at, three episodes that we will learn over the coming years. No joke? Vayikra, Bereshit, Yud Aleph. Beginning to nine. Tell me, you don't need any detail, you all know the story. If I ask you to write two lines, what's the common theme in all three? Common theme in all three. God, what?
He's looking down, he doesn't like what's happening on him.
And what are the consequences in each time? What?
Good.
God has given something to somebody. He gave Adam and Chava Gan Eden. Good. Did they follow his guidelines? Absolutely not. What happens when you don't follow his guides? Vayashal chayu Hashem b'gan Eden. Goodbye, job. Finish, you're out of Gan Eden. Next. He gave the rest of the world to the inhabitants of all of the descendants of Cain. Right? Who gave birth to Enosh and to Mahalalel and to Shades and so on and so forth. And then at the end, what did God notice about the people who he had given the rest of the world to? What did he notice? That's correct. Vati male haaretz chamas. What is chamas? What does God decide to do at that point? Wipe them out. You're not going to be connected to this land any longer. Then we come to Parshat Noach. And what happens in Parshat Noach? Once again, a generation whose transgression is not explicitly stated in the text. We call it the Dor HaHaflaga. And what does God do?
Terminate the
lease. Umisham hefitzam. You're out of here. He spread them out all over the place. You live here? Sorry, you're not living here. Tell me how Ramban, he is the one who led me to these, uses these three to put a little more clout and legal principle behind Rashi's idea. Tell me how Ramban is going to use these three and the common denominator to give a little more halakhic clout, legal standing to Rashi's idea. To Rashi's idea. And then I'll show you in the text where it's actually recorded. In the text. What do you think Rashi is? Okay, so open up now to chapter 18 of Sefer Vayikra, verse 3. 18, verse 3. Perek Yudchet, it's the middle of Achremot. Perek Yudchet, Pasuk Gimel. The Ramban doesn't send you over here, I'm sending over there. Perek Yuchet Pasuk Gimel. Kima'asei Eretz Mitzrayim Eshe Yishavtem Ba'alotam. Uchima'asei Eretz Kina'an Asher Ani Mevi Etchem Shama Lo Ta'asam. Good. So now give me the whole picture supporting the legal precedent that the Ramban claims Rashi has in mind. Yes.
Rashi's whole thing is that God is the owner of the real estate and he can, you know, terminate
leases left and
right.
Good. So Rashi, if you just read him in the third grade, why did he decide to terminate the lease of the Kanani and the Titi? Why did Rashi say?
Because
I wanted to. That's it. I own it. I put you there. I'm sorry. I decided. Yeah, it's nice. That's it. I'm terminating the lease. Any reason for it? None. Claims Ramban, no, that's not true. It's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is being indiscriminate and just playing favor. Oh, now you're here, tomorrow you're there. No. Every single time there is a guiding principle. What is the guiding principle? What is the guiding principle? I'll give you something. On condition that what? That you maintain some degree of loyalty to my an ethical way of life, to a decent way of life, to a moral way of life. The minute you what? Fail to observe his command, then you're out of here. Adam and Chava had but one commandment to observe. Don't eat this one lousy tree. They had 60,000 trees to eat from. That's the one they had to eat from. That's the way we all are, right? You know, you can eat it. No, just don't do this. It's exactly what you want to do. Then the second example. They were Hamas. Malayim Hamas. They were engaged in theft. All types of theft. Theft to buy chocolate. Whatever the chait was of the Dor HaFlagah. So it's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided that when the Jew was entering Eretz Yisrael, I'm just so Kanani figure in the door. They were involved in abominable behavior, which God asks us not to replicate. And adds the Ramban. Please now go to the end of Acharei Mot. Go back to the end of chapter 18. To the end of 18. And he says the Ramban is struggling. God's not going to play favorites even with you. Even with Am Yisrael. Look at the phrase. No. Plus, I want you to look at Chafet. The Lotaki Haaretz Etchem. Betama Achem Ota. Mazel Lahaki? Strow up. It's going to spit you out. So the Ramban says it's not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way Rashi is interpreted in a little kid's grade. That what? Yeah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu owned it, he created it, says you can have it today. So you're like your mother, you're a mother and a child, right? You have two children, so today you give this one, so this is, I'm giving you a gift. 2 days later, says, no, I'm taking it away, I'm giving it to the other one. That's guaranteed to create havoc in your house. That's not the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu operates. The kid is entitled to the gift if he follows the rules and regulations. The minute you don't follow the rules and regulations, the gift, you forfeit. And we also will forfeit that gift. Have we not forfeited it twice in history? Of course we did. Why? Because we were not worthy of it. For whatever reasons, we were not worthy of it. So, the velo taki ha'aretz echem applies to the same thing that applied to Kanani, Kiti, and Moripriz. Therefore, says the Ramban, amplifying Rashi, why do I record all of the stories in Sefer Bereishit? Yes, to ultimately justify Am Yisrael's acquisition of Israel, but it's the same condition upon which applies to everybody else. Am Yisrael were not the first people who earned Eretz Yisrael. They were not. It was called Eretz Canaan at the time. But had they not blown it, we would not have gotten it. That's it. We would have stayed out another year, another 5 years. Yes.
Well, wouldn't it have been even a stronger statement if we would have seen in the Torah where Hashem told the nations who were in Eretz Israel before us that there were rules in that land?
He did.
Where is that?
Okay. we believe that that Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noah are obligatory, and God shared that with the children of Noah. That they are obligated, and all of their descendants are obligated to observe but seven commandments.
Where is that here?
Okay, yes. We will find them as we go through Sefer Bereishit. All seven of them documented. Documented in the text.
But in a sense, to a non-Jew, for instance, who is, but we're basically saying, when the other nations could become jealous, who said that the B'nai Yisrael should get Eretz Yisrael? And basically, the beginning of Bereishit is to show that Hashem is the person who created the world, and he has the right to say that B'nai Yisrael get Eretz Yisrael. But if it's so hidden,
The Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noah are pretty well known in society. They're basically asking you to be a decent person. Don't kill, don't rob. You'll have to find that. That doesn't say black on white. I grant you that. But according to this, the answer according is amplified, buttressed by the Ramban, that it's not just an arbitrary whim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu deciding to make that change at that particular time. That's point number one. Yes?
Isn't there another point that Israel will always be our land whether we behave or not?
That is not true.
We'll go back to it if we change. Some people don't. I mean, like the Indians don't think they're going to gain
that. Some of them still think that they will. You know, that's why
they think it's theirs. Okay, to begin with.
Okay, that's a good.
But
that's
not
a good point.
The same as returning too.
I understand. Somebody suggested in reaction to President Obama's speech that Mexico propose that we go back to the borders of the United States from 1848.
Let's see how we react.
To 1848, somebody, it was an interesting spin. Yes.
Does Hamas, is it from here?
I don't know. That would be a very funny way to identify themselves as thieves. But it's Kishmokenu. What can I tell you? Okay. But there's a second possibility, and this is offered by Rav Chevelle. Rav Chevelle is, if you're familiar with the Ramban, the blue Ramban is over there, and that's the English translation. Initially, the Ramban just wrote paragraph after paragraph, and it was very hard to understand where he was culling from. What Rav Chevelle did initially in the Hebrew was put out a critical edition of the Ramban. So he breaks it up into paragraphs. When the Ramban is quoting a phrase in Eov, he lets you know it's taken from Eov, he didn't make up this phrase. When the Ramban is quoting a Mechilta, he tells you exactly where it is. And he makes an attempt when the Ramban starts quoting Kabbalah, because he does often, which he calls Aderech HaEmet, he tries to give us some inkling as to what it is. It's a major contribution. Rav Chevelle, a major contribution. It's the most authoritative work on the Ramban to date that we have. So he also wrote on Rashi and other Rishonim. And he suggests the following. Particularly when a Mifaresh uses a Midrash as opposed to explaining the Pasuk Al Pi Pshat. And Rashi in the first five psukim is going to say, HaPasuk HaZeh Omer Darsheni. The pasuk is begging me to tell you a drash, not to explain. And if you want the pshat, I'll tell you what the pshat is also. But the pasuk is begging, I'll show you five, six places in the very beginning of Sefer Bereishis. After a while, he gets tired of telling us that because he wants you to expect, as I told you last week, that he's always going to be using the medrash. Does anybody happen to know the climate of Jewish history when Rashi was writing this commentary? What was happening to Am Yisrael?
The Crusades.
First Crusades. Exactly. Town after town, the great European centers of world Jewry were being smashed. Worms, Mainz, Spires. Those were the three big academies. And as I once told you, had Rashi gone to those academies, we would never have had Rashi. He would have been killed with all other Chachmei Ashkenaz. Fortunately, Rashi's parents didn't send him to yeshiva. Not because they couldn't afford to pay tuition. They could well afford it. Because they needed Rashi to work on the fields. As part of their winery, they were the largest exporters of champagne and wine to the whole world. They were an incredibly successful family. And they needed Rashi to work. So Rashi had three private tutors. And he identifies that in the Gemara all the time. Rabbeinu Yaakov ben Yakar, Rabbeinu Yitzchak, and Rabbeinu Yehuda. He tells us who is. I heard this from my Rebbe, And Rashi wrote this. But Rashi is not oblivious to what's happening in Jewish history. In addition to towns in Europe being overrun, what major city important to Am Yisrael was being attempted or almost attempted to be overtaken by the Crusaders? Yerushalayim, exactly. Rav Shevel believes that Rashi opens up his commentary on the Chumash to offer a glimmer of hope to members of Am Yisrael who are living at a time when Am Yisrael is being crushed. Absolutely crushed. And that knowing that Yerushalayim is about to be snatched from us, the Crusaders were so successful in eliminating a presence of Jews in Israel, that the Ramban writes a letter to his son upon reaching Yerushalayim HaKodesh, I can't find a minyan to daven. I could not find a minyan in Yerushalayim to daven when the Ramban reaches Yerushalayim 100 years later. Couldn't find a minyan. So they were successful. So in order to somehow give a glimmer of hope to Am Yisrael, knowing the world situation, how does Rashi choose to open up his commentary to the Chumash? Nothing to do with Sefer Bereishis. What is his point? What is his emphasis in this midrash which he selected?
The land.
The land. Eretz Yisrael is going to be ours one day. Right now it's being overrun. Right now it's being seized, trampled upon. Don't worry. The balances will be restored, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu will decide one day he's going to take it from them and give it to us. Don't give up hope. So that's a very interesting perspective, that Rashi's opening remark is designed, in effect, to offer a degree of nechama and tikva to Am Yisrael, Rashi having recognized what the matzav of Bnei Yisrael was at that particular time. And therefore he decides to forget about the Medrash. He decides to quote this, forget about the Pshat, quote this particular Medrash, which according to many, they couldn't find. Don't forget, at that time they didn't have Bar Ilans, which had texts, everything recorded. Most of the commentaries on Rashi believe that Rashi made up the authorship of this particular Rashi. And who is this Rabbi Yitzchak? His father. And that his father really was not much of a Talmudic scholar, and he wanted to just give homage and honor to his father. See, he opens up his commentary in Rashi. It's the first and only time he quotes this Rabbi Yitzchak. That's what many say. And indeed, where this particular Medrash is quoted several times, indeed, Rabbi Yitzchak's name does not appear. However, as I told you last week, in a version recorded in Yalkut Shimoni, it is quoted the name of the Rabbi Yitzchak. It's quoted 3-4 times, this Medrash. But in an old version of Yalkut Shimoni, it is quoted the name of Rabbi Yitzchak. But anyhow, I just want to let you know what Rav Shevel's thought was, that, and he uses this as a basis for engaging in a question which is a very burning academic intellectual question. Is a commentator of the Chumash ever influenced by his own environment as he writes his text? As he makes halachic decisions? So this is a major difference between those who have a little more open mind, a little more, I'm going to use the same phrase it carefully. In the yeshiva world, they don't believe that that's true. They do not believe that a Rishon would ever be influenced in terms of his commentary based on the circumstances of his environment. Not to a commentary on the text, and even more so, not to make a halakhic decision. A halakhic decision has to be made only through the prism perspective of absolute Torah. And we believe, those a little more, you know, a little global, recognize and believe, and give you 50,000 illustrations, that many a times, Rishonim, Amoraim, Tanaim, and Achronim, often their commentary is based on the fact, or has to be taken against the background of where they lived, when they lived, circumstances that existed at that time, personal experiences that which they may have experienced undoubtedly influenced them. There is no doubt. And whether they want to acknowledge it or not, there is so much evidence for that idea, even in our own day and age. People always wanted to know, why was the Rav so machmir about Avenus? The Rav was generally a very big mekel in most areas of halacha. Suddenly comes to Inyani Avelis, he was so machmir. Very, very stringent in quite a kind of areas. And people, he never wrote this is the reason, but it's analyzed that way, that when you lose your mother, your brother, and your wife in a span of 3 months, it made an impact upon him, so much so that for the first year when he came back to YU, he couldn't learn anything but Hilchos Avelos. That's he did it taught in YU. He learned Hilchos Avelos with his shir in 1967 and 68. That's all he could do. So it does have an impact upon you. And here, this is an illustration right at the very beginning of the Chumash, where according to Rav Shevel, Rashi's remark is predicated upon such a thing.
Rabbi,
yes?
But he quotes his father, because his father was a merchant who looked at the world and said,
correct.
I'm exporting to here, but look, these
no
guys
doubt.
Are overrunning the market. And
point well taken. Point well taken.
Changes when God extends his fingers, and we have to adjust.
Point well taken. No doubt about it. Of course. The famous Deres Hashman, right? Deres Hashman.
There you would find that.
Hold that about it.
It's all predicated on that.
Of course. Where the Rambam deals with people who went ahead and, were Moranos, and now they want to come back, and how leniently, how merciful he was, even though in his halakhic text, he was not, in his pure halakhic thing, he was not, he didn't take it into consideration. But this was a halakhic lemaisa situation. And obviously it reflected his halakhic attitude, even though in his own code he was not as tolerant. No doubt. Point number three, Chassam Sofer's comment on Rashi, on this midrashic remark. Point number three. If you and me were asked to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu's relationship with Am Yisrael during Yitziat Mitzrayim, what would come to your mind as we recognize the relationship between God and ourselves in the drama of Yetzias Mitzrayim? What? To say how? Nisim v'niflaot. Lima'ala miderech hateva. Lima'ala miderech hateva. Now, above and beyond the realm of nature. Now, that creates problems at times. Because if you're not privileged to experience that type of divine revelation, so what happens is, am I going to believe in such a thing? If things are just happening every day, naturally? That's why for so many years, the Jew needed a prophet. Here is something a little irregular. I think I mentioned this in the past. Many people believe that the generations have gone down spiritually from the time that our forefathers were privileged to have prophets and see these miracles and so on and so forth. And today we don't. I really believe it's just the opposite. We are far more sophisticated because we don't need them in order to confirm our religious convictions to our Kodesh Baruch. You and me never saw Kriyas Yamsuf. We never had anybody speak to Kadosh Baruch Hu directly in our midst. And yet, I don't see anybody say, ah, Shabbos is a waste of time. Kashrut is a waste of time. It's been ingrained in our system for over 2,500 years already. We don't need it anymore. At that time, when it was something brand new, you couldn't convince a soul to accept a God who you can't see, can't feel, can't touch, can't hear, unless you would expose yourself in such a miraculous fashion. What is the essence of Sefer Bereshit? What is the essence of Sefer? What ultimately do we identify the world of creation as? Is that Nisim v'Niflaot? No, those are called Chukei HaTeva. That's the laws of nature. Simply things happen. The sun rises, the sun sets. It's raining, it's snowing, it gets cold, the leaves turn blue. You know, this happens, the leaves fall. You know, that's what happens. We cycle. Says the Chassam Sofer. Why does Rashi make a reference here to the acquisition of Eretz Yisrael and link it to Sefer Bereshit to tell us as if it would have happened at his time too. Don't forget Chassam Sofer is in the 1800s. That in order to what? To appreciate and to recognize and to believe that we will be masters of Israel, do not believe for a second that there has to be miraculous events in order to justify your acquiring of Israel. It can and will happen within what's called Derech HaTeva. Nothing is going to change. Since the world will go on exactly the way it went yesterday and the day before. And nonetheless, we will be privileged to acquire that land. Therefore, claims Chassam Sofer, Rashi wants to put the address of acquisition of Israel not in Sefer Bamidbar, where God acts with Am Yisrael only within the realm of the miraculous. He puts it in Sefer Bereshit. And the challenge for you and me is to recognize that just as the sunrise and the sunset is as powerful an expression of the hand of God, that so too when events proceed and you seem to think that what? It's just nature unfolding, the natural course of events, be it political, social, economic, or anything else, all of this is also orchestrated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Just 1 second. Orchestrated by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Moshe Dayan said it very well in 67. You have to be blind not to see the hand of God in the 6 day war. You've got to be blind. HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent Moshe Rabbeinu, was there Kriyas Yamsuf? No. But if you know the odds of how it was stacked against us, and you know the odds in 1947 that Al Pi Derech HaTeva, the United Nations is going to vote for the creation of the State of Israel. Russia is going to vote in the United Nations in favor of the creation of the state. But it looks like it was an actual event they voted for. That's how HaKadosh Baruch Hu operating behind the scenes. Behind the scenes. Therefore, he claims, Rashi wants to establish that principle right at the opening. That in order for us to expect a return to Eretz Yisrael, it does not have to be under the conditions of the original entry into Eretz Yisrael. Whereas Nisim v'Niflaot, as Moshe writes at the end of Sefer Hamasot HaGdolot, V'Hamotim V'Osos Asher Ro'u Einecha, you yourself, doesn't have to be like that. It can happen in a very natural way and a very gradual way. Therefore, Yerushat Eretz Yisrael placed right within Chukei HaTeva, creation of the world. Because our claim to Eretz Yisrael need not be based on divine revelation out of the ordinary spectacular. Yes?
But in a sense, even though Rashi is saying don't hope, he might also be saying it is based on following the mitzvos one more time, going returning.
correct?
And following those laws so that you could come back. So it's not just going to happen necessarily that you're not going to notice. You have to kind of do tshuva.
There's no doubt. But even when you do tshuva, the method of acquisition and return is not going to be accompanied necessarily by miraculously. It'll be a natural a flight event that people... Undoubtedly. But historians will be able to write it and describe it in human terms. That's Chassam Sofer's point. That's Chassam Sofer's point.
Well, you can say...
Go right ahead.
That God acts or speaks to people in the language that their generation understands. And previous generations understood miracles more than we do. We understand, we analyze natural processes.
Right.
Understand them.
Correct.
On the other hand, we have the history of the miracles. So it's not like we're just using our common sense or our beliefs. We are using our beliefs with the context of believing in the miracles.
Yeah. That is very true. That is true that we can understand. Having seen miracles, you can understand that as things undergo what they appear in the natural, those two are underlying miracles. That's a very good point. It's a very good point. Very good point. Yes?
What specific tie-in of that point for Rashi from the Pasuk? That point that will just be the Derech HaTeva?
That's what Chassam Sofer claims. Because the topic here is Maaseh Bereishis, which we call Chukei HaTeva. And why is Rashi bringing in Eretz Yisrael, our right to Israel, to link acquisition of Israel, that it can be even at a time when God is not operating with Nisim Geluyim? That's his suggestion. Okay, Lama Gein Vayter. Now that Rashi's gotten that out of the way, he will begin to try to understand how to interpret this particular phrase. Bereshit bara Elohim. Now, Rashi at the very outset, take a look at the next Rashi. He says, Ein hamikra hazeh omer er ledarsheni. The pasuk is begging me, even to explain it contextually, I'm going to find it difficult to what? Difficult to what? To explain it, I'll peep shot. Because the way it's translated in more Chumash, in the beginning, it means that the word Bereshit is standing alone. In the beginning, Bara Elohim, Rashi, Ibn Ezra, and Ramban will all cite 50 citations indicating that the word Reshit in Tanakh never stands alone. It's always attached. Correct. Always attached to something else. Either or. Reshit Digancha. Reshit Bikurei Artsecha. And Rashi will give 50 others. Good. Reshit Chachma. The word Reshit in Tanakh is never used standing as its own. It's always, in Rashi, we'll read it and say, Davuk Leteva Shela Achrav. It's always connected to the word that immediately follows. And the way the translations read, Bereshit, in the beginning, it's not good. What word is Bara lit to the way it in English translates Bara Elohim? Not Bereshit Bara. Therefore, Rashi tells you at the outset, from a pshat point of view, I can't explain it. Because it is not following the pattern of the rest of Tanakh. And as you well know, that is the first way to understand pshat. The first way to understand pshat, when you don't know what a word means, the most important way to discover it is to see how it is used elsewhere. That's the number one. If it's not used elsewhere, you have to try to figure out contextually. But the first thing that you always try to do is see how the word is used. That's all Ibn Ezra does. He'll tell you, come like this, come like that. That's what Malbim does 99% of the time. Says Rashi, it ain't going to work here. Therefore, Rashi, before he will even make an attempt, will tell you, you know what, I'll give you a couple of quick drushes. What does it mean? Look at Rashi says. Kimoshi Darshu Rabbi saying, Bishvil HaTorah Shenikra Reishit Darko. See, Reishit Darko. Based on the fact, the Torah, which is called Reishit Darko, the first of his ways, Ubishvil Yisrael Shenikru Reishit Tevuato, and on account of the fact that Am Yisrael is described as the first of his grain, Tevuah, his grain. So now what's happening? So how's Rashi, what's the Medrash telling about the word Bereshit? Bereshit.
It's a contraction.
Based on what? Based on what the word Reshit happens to symbolize, namely, it symbolizes Torah, it symbolizes Am Yisrael. So now you put the two together. Based on the fact that there will be a nation who will commit themselves to observe God's Torah, what did God now do? That's how Rashi offers his first interpretation, Midrash. Based on the fact that the word Reshit is identified as an adjective describing Reshit Tvuata, referring to Am Yisrael, Reshit HaKadosh Baruch Hu's creation of Torah, the combining of the two, the nation that will commit itself to the Torah, under those circumstances, God created the world. Inference, that if you were not to accept the Torah, or all of Am Yisrael would choose to abandon his Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have good grounds to destroy the entire world. Right? And we had a prediction that it was going to happen a couple of days ago. Right? Hope nobody bet on it. But now we already changed it. It's going to be in October. October, okay. Anybody can do that, you know. Come October, say next April. So, yeah. That's right. Okay, good. You put that in the weekly brief. That's all. Yes. So that's how he says, Kach Parshehu. Parshe. We'll stop here. And then we'll try to see a pshat point of view offered by Rashi himself, who make a suggestion, and two others by Ramban and Ibn Ezra.